The Ruando Podcast is an exploration of the unconscious and the game of life. Be sure to visit ruando.com to get a preview chapter of my upcoming book, Infinite Play, and free access to my content library. Enjoy the show.
Hey, what's going on?
Mr. Dean. You actually, I wanted to tell you before we jump into anything, so we were exchanging voice notes and I said something about how I haven't really ever done archery. Like I've hit a target with like a 24 pound bow and I've been trying to hunt pigeons. I keep missing. Finally killed one.
Right.
Like the next day after I sent that, I finally hit a pigeon. The pigeons have gotten sneakier though in eating my chicken food. Like as soon as I walk out, before they would let me get a shot off and then they would fly away. And now as soon as I touch the bow, they're all gone. So they become harder to eat, but I mean, harder to hit. Sorry.
Well, you're kind of like accomplishing your objective there anyway.
Well, they still eat the chicken food. They're just in and out faster. So they've actually upgraded their skills.
Oh yeah.
So anyway,
you like a scarecrow with a bow.
Yeah.
During the art.
Yeah. So have you been shooting much lately?
Yeah, nearly every day I go. At least 5 days a week. I go to the range. I was just there right before I started this deal.
Nice. So we kind of got on this thread because you messaged me about target panic, like a John Dudley thing. Could you say that, or could you explain that again? That was really interesting.
Yeah, I was just having trouble like being consistent, shooting consistently. And like I'd shoot really good for a while, and then like I did a tournament a couple weekends ago, and it was like decent the first day, and then the next day I just phoned it in. It just like went terrible, not terrible, but I missed. Like I just it was a 3D shoot, so I don't know if you've ever seen like the animals that are big foam targets shaped like animals, and I just completely missed two of them. Like it went low on two of them. And they're just like rookie mistakes, you know, that I made because I wasn't like focused, you know. Like the first one I missed because I shot off the wrong pin on my sight and just missed it. And then that put me in a shitty headspace. And then I just missed the other one because I was just like, I got target panic. Target panic is like when you draw up and you're aiming and then you're just like, mind is racing about, you just get like this anxiety, this kind of like back and forth talking your mind about whether or not you're going to hit, like what the right thing to do is. Like you second guess all the ways that you're pulling your release, letting the bow go, letting like everything in your mind just races. And then you just, of course you miss, you know, to do that. So I was like, well, I shoot really good at times, but I'm not as consistent as I want to be. I just saw a video by John Dudley, which he's an archer. He's a really pretty well-known guy. He's a hunter and he's been on Joe Rogan's podcast and like, he's like buddy with Joe Rogan and stuff. And he did a video about target panic and like how to cure it. And the video was about how to like just have consistency basically in your release. I shoot a compound bow, which you don't shoot off your fingers. You shoot off like a mechanical release, and I use a thumb release. So it's like a device that hooks onto your string, and then there's a trigger, which is activated by your thumb. And that lets the string go because it's like, it's more consistent than using your fingers. And there's this phenomenon called punching where when you draw back, you will like just punch the trigger in like a panicky sort of way. Like, because when you're holding on a target, you'll kind of like be moving around a little bit. You're never just like totally still. It's like you move around and then you just like think you're going to, it's you kind of guess, and it's like this half-assed sort of way of just like guessing and trying to like punch the button when you get over the middle of the sight. And it's a really inconsistent way to shoot, and it's like it's not a good deal. So he was talking in the video about just getting to where your process is, for one, like the same all the time. Every time you pull the bow back, do it the exact same way, like hit the same sequence, you know, every time. And then your release has got to come not by punching the button, but you kind of like put your hand on your trigger, squeeze it, hold it tight, and then you pull with your arm like back behind you through the shot. And as you pull, your thumb will press that button. And then now you're using like your whole upper back, arm, and shoulders to pull this button. And it's a lot smoother and it's a lot more consistent. Mm-hmm. So he had an exercise set up where you took the sight off your bow and you just get like right in front of the target, and all you do is just work on just doing this, getting this like release down consistently.
And the thing that I thought was interesting is like you're kind of guaranteeing yourself to hit the bullseye because you're so close.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because the whole thing, you're kind of making a metaphor with this, like to like hitting targets in life, right? That's the.
Right. Yeah. At that point, you're not really even concerned about hitting the bullseye. You just want to get close so you can hit the bale. So you don't like, you know, you just want to have your arrows like hit the bale. It's not really about hitting the bullseye because you're like, I take my sight off. So I'm not even aiming. It's like you're doing something so basic that you're taking out, like a part of the reason behind target panic is that you think about all these different like layers, like when you draw back and all these different thoughts come into your head about what you're supposed to be doing, how you're supposed to be doing it. And then you're trying to like juggle all these in this like panicky sort of way. And then you can't and you fail. So the idea behind just taking the sight off and just using your release is that you're doing nothing but thinking about this motion of like drawing your shoulder blades together, pulling your elbow back behind you, holding your hand like firmly, and then just you want the bow to go off by surprise so that you don't know the exact moment. You're just holding steady, pulling through, and then boom, it goes off. So the idea of taking the sight off is that where you're not thinking about aiming at all. You're just doing this motion over and over again. And just getting to where that's like memorized and natural and just like where you don't think about your release and how to release anymore. So that like when you do start shooting a target, like your focus is only on the target, not on how to like execute these like subtle things. And you find that like as you do this, I did this drill every day. I went and shoot. There's a couple days I went and shot and I just didn't shoot at a target at all. I shot like 100 arrows just like this. And it frees your mind up and lets you, when you get to where this motion is just natural and second nature, then it's like, it lets you relax, it lets your mind ease up. There's less that you have to think about and you can just, and you're like, you know, you're like conscious, ego-centered focus, I guess you could say, is only focused on, you can just concentrate on like looking downrange at the sight, and then like this process in your body is just kind of like, it does itself. So that's kind of the idea behind it. And since I started doing this exercise, like my shooting's gotten way better and just way more consistent. Like because I would get a lot of good shots and then I have lots of like flyers here and there, you know.
Yeah.
But this way, it's just like every time it's just like it's pretty good.
You know? Yeah. And this is interesting, you know, because we're not really talking about, I mean, we're talking about archery, but the right. thing that had you bring it up to me before was like, this is like an interesting kind of more detailed metaphor than I expected actually, of like when you're too focused on a certain objective, that in itself can kind of cause a mm-hmm. person to overthink things. And like, I guess it's kind of like fear of success. I think that's what the context and how you brought it up initially, right?
Yeah, he said, John Dudley in that video said that what you're like worried about, what you're afraid of is not missing. It's like, it's hitting the center, the ten ring, the bullseye. Like that's what you're afraid of. And when I heard him say that, I was like, man, that's real talk, man. That's wise for sure. But like there's something much bigger about that as well.
Yeah. So how have you seen this, like you were speaking about your goals at the time, like, and this is maybe a week ago you sent me this idea. Have you seen anything? And like, is there a version of like this target not target exercise, like taking the sights off with like a life goal, for instance?
I can't say that I've developed some big life goal that I'm chasing after now, you know, in this week, but I feel like I've seen some kind of, like I've developed some kind of different feel and just how I feel generally, like just a more of a calmness or like a single-mindedness in my thinking. Like lots of things that I was thinking about, I just noticed how they now can just like they kind of like drop out of the way. They're like in the periphery and they don't come into like my focus, but they just like they fall away, you know. You recognize what's a distraction and what's not important.
I've been reading this book. It's actually kind of a little bit about trading, but it's also the guy who wrote it did all these experiments on how testosterone levels affect your success when you're trading securities or something, and among other things. But he's going into this whole thing on the nervous system and how our muscles react like 5 times faster than our conscious mind and even faster than our emotions. It's like when you describe this whole like John Dudley practice, I'm thinking like, it's basically getting, you can't really trust your conscious mind to do things right under pressure. Like you, I guess this is the point of drilling, like drilling anything. It's like your muscles react fast enough. And cause when you brought this idea up, I was thinking about like the goals that I have that when I fixate on them, I kind of distract myself. Like I've been, you know, if I share like what I've been most frustrated about with myself, like I've been working on this book for like 8 years and like I keep getting closer and then not finishing it. And when you brought this up, I was like, is it something about this pressure of completing the book that's making me overthink it and then miss the arrow or lose the thread I'm on? And I don't know. I've been thinking about what is the version of like, I guess it's just like getting up and writing at the same time every day or something. Would be like just pulling the string back or whatever.
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, I practiced Zen for a long time, and in Zen meditation, kind of like the question to everybody's like answer about things is always just like, well, just sit with it. It's like, you want to ask all these, it's like, you want to get into these like debates and stuff, and then the teacher is just kind of like, if you just sit with it, you know, and there's a difficulty in just sitting and doing nothing. You know, or just doing something very simple. I could notice that, like, this is kind of more metaphorical again, but like if I'm shooting and I'm not hitting the bullseye, or I don't have my sight on and I'm just doing the exercise, I could be like, damn, like I'm just doing this practice. Like, I don't know if I'm getting better. I'm not testing myself. Like, how do I know if I'm going to hit the target? Because I'm just shooting the fucking bail at 10 yards away and I don't have a sight on or anything. It's like, I don't know. Like, and then you can get your mind into this whole thing where you're like, I don't know if this is going to work or not. And if it doesn't, then I've just wasted these 3 days when I could have been shooting with a sight on at 70 yards or whatever. I think that there's an element of that constant testing. You want to always be like testing yourself and measuring yourself and like seeing if you're making it or not. That can be a pretty bad deal.
Yeah, you and I have spoken about kettlebells a bit. And it's like, it's making me think, you may have heard this on Joe Rogan with Firas Sahavi, like the difference between Russian style training and American style. Like, American philosophy is like always go to failure, like all I keep progressively overloading and stuff, whereas like traditional Russian strength training is like you get your kettlebell and that's your kettlebell and you just train with this weight until it becomes like stupid light, but you might be on the same weight for a long ass time and you don't know if you're actually getting stronger because you're swinging the same weight. Like maybe you're getting a sense of like, it's only subjective, right? There's no external metric of I got stronger for using the same kettlebell. But that seems to give better gains. It seems to keep things more playful and light and easy. And it kind of, I guess, requires faith, right? Because if you're not the whole need to test yourself is like this insecurity of like, I don't know if I'm actually getting better or not. I don't know if this thing that I'm working on is actually making me more zen or more strong or more wise or whatever.
Yeah, it's like you want to have some kind of external result that you can like hold up and say, like, here it is, like I've done it. But like the feel of doing it comes from just doing these very simple things, you know. It's like an addiction to outcome, you know, that constant testing yourself. That like, if you're hitting bullseyes all the time, then you're really doing it. I mean, John Dudley, I heard another video talk about how he'll see like kids practicing and their parents are like standing behind them with the binoculars. And every shot the kid takes, they look back at the parents to be like, where was it, you know? And he's like, that's so bad. He's like, that's so bad for your archery game, because like that's something I haven't worried too much about. Like I'll shoot and shoot and shoot, and I when you shoot like far, if you shoot like 70 or 80 yards, you can't see where your arrow is on the target down there. Sometimes you can, but not real well. And I see guys out there with like binoculars and they look every time, and I'm just like, I don't understand what that does for you. It really doesn't do anything for you, unless you're like trying to sight in a bow and you want to know where your arrow's hitting, like then you need to know. But if you're just shooting, like your objective is the same, hit the center. And if you're holding where you need to, then like nothing's going to change whether or not you know where it's, hitting down the field.
Yeah, that's something I've wondered about actually, because like with really, like I saw this video where Joe Rogan hits a buck in the heart from like some distance where like you can't possibly see it. Like I've wondered how without like a scope, how do you actually see like what you're hitting? Like, is it really just like an intuitive thing essentially?
Well, the compound bow, you have a sight, and yeah, there's no magnification or anything on a hunting bow. I mean, you couldn't hit, and like, I remember that. I think I know that video you're talking about. He was with John Dudley and he shot an elk at, something I want to say, like 60 something yards.
Yeah.
So at 60 yards, you have like the way a sight on a compound bow works is that when you pull back, right, you have your string kind of coming down this way across your face, and there's like a little peak with just like a little metal circle. And then on the bow, there's an actual sight that has different pins for different yardages. Or sometimes they have one pin and it's adjustable.
Gotcha.
So that pin is pretty small and has like a little fiber optic, like glow type sight.
Gotcha.
And you can get like at 60 yards, you can, I don't know what that, maybe like 2 or 3 inches that pin kind of like magnifies out to, you know, 60 yards. So you can be pretty accurate, you know, if you're a good shot. But like, yeah, to kill something and make a good shot at 60 some yards is like, that's a high skill level.
Gotcha.
Of archery.
Yeah, I've been trying to kill these pigeons at maybe 15 yards, not even, maybe close. Yeah, maybe like 10 to 15 yards with no sight, and I keep missing pretty badly, except for this one.
Yeah. I mean, with a, man, shooting trad bows, which is like, trad is like a non-compound bow, which is, and with no sight, and it's only like 25 pounds or something like that, it's hard to be very accurate with that.
Yeah, you know, I felt really bad. I mean, I've killed two animals so far. Both of them were not clean kills, and I feel pretty shitty about it. Like it took like 5 arrows to kill this pigeon. Even the last couple were like almost at point blank range. And if I had known, I probably would have really taken my time with the headshot. But I thought, oh, an arrow is like, you know, a pigeon's like this.
Was the pigeon like flopping?
Well, after the first two shots, it stopped moving. So I thought it was dead for sure. It had 2 arrows through it clean. And then I went to go get like gloves to like dispose of it. But it was a good flapping around when I came back. And it was really gross. I won't describe it. I mean, to the people, but like, it was like a horror scene. It's like, oh my God, I can't believe it was still alive. Like I ended up having to chop its head off because I wasn't sure if the arrows were going to kill it or not.
Yeah. I mean, they'll die, you know, sometimes. It takes a few seconds, but when I used to hunt dove, in Texas, dove hunting is like a popular thing. You just sit by like a big water tank with shotguns and doves fly by and everybody shoots doves. Then you have like a big cookout afterwards with all the dead meat. But I mean, often you shoot them with a shotgun, they don't always just like die right away. They hit the ground and then they might flop. So we just grab them and just twist their head off.
Gotcha.
So you feel them.
Yeah.
Well, I'll yeah, I don't know. Yeah, you see, if you can get a hand on him, just grab him and just pop his head off, and that's how you kill a bird.
Gotcha.
I mean, it's like a chicken or something, you know, they cut their heads off. It's the fastest way.
Yeah. I told you the one chicken I slaughtered, it wasn't a clean kill either, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. But anyway, I'm learning.
Yeah. Yeah, I've never killed the chicken, but I've seen people do it, and they just cut their head totally off.
Yeah,
I saw this video of this chick on one of these Alaska shows, and they had this setup that was like a cone with a hole in the bottom. When she killed chickens, she would stick their head in there and cut their head and off.
Yeah, that's what my buddy said I should set up to do, but I didn't bother. You know, it's funny. I had 8 chickens back then. Went on vacation because there's pollution out around here in February. So 5 of them. Died, and I only have 2 left, and like now they really feel like pets. Like before they're like livestock, they're all anonymous, but now there's only 2 of them, and I feel like this sentimental attachment to them because now I can identify them. I don't know, it's weird. It's like how they kind of transition in my mind because they're they're rare. Anyway, actually, have you read the book The Inner Game of Tennis?
No.
Well, it's like so some of the stuff you're describing with the target panic is very similar. Like his whole thing using tennis as a metaphor is like, when you remember all the things you're supposed to do in tennis, I don't know what they are, but like plant your feet or not plant your feet or whatever you're supposed to do with your feet and then your racket, whatever, people always hit the ball weird. But if they stop thinking about the action and just focus on something like the seams of the ball, they usually end up having perfect form or something like that. And that's something I've thought about a lot. And, you know, it's like with all of this stuff where it's easy to choke, whether it's like shooting a bow or a creative process or whatever, it's like a lot of it seems to be figuring out what the right thing to focus on is, because the wrong thing just makes you mess up. It'd be cool to come up with like a maxim or like a set of rules for this in life. But I guess, you know, if it was that easy, we would not choke.
I was thinking about that. And I think what a big thing I've been learning about shooting with this bow is that it's just a matter of like isolating elements so that you don't have any option but to just think about one thing. Like when I shoot my bow, I just take the sight off, and it's not like I could be like, I'm not going to think about this sight, but the sight is there and my attention is going to be drawn to it. So I just take it off, so it's not even an option. So where I can't even like try to aim if I wanted to, all I can do is just work on this one thing. And then, because I feel like your conscious intention can really only be focused on like one thing, or maybe it can or it can't, but it's optimal for it to be only focused on one thing.
Yeah.
And you need to be able to have it only focused on one thing by having a foundation of other things kind of in place where they do themselves automatically. So they like, if you wanted to play tennis and you didn't want to think about how to plant your feet, maybe you do some drills to like learn how to feel a good base with your feet, and you wouldn't even like hold a racket or something. Yeah. Like I like to Olympic weightlift, so like those movements could be like kind of complex. And essentially the processes of training is that like to snatch and clean and jerk is like to break down the different elements of these lifts. So that like if you want to work on your jerk and you're new starting out, you might work on like a split jerk without a bar or anything in your hands, not even like a PVC, and just learn how to place your feet the right way. And if you do a bunch of those drills and you learn how to place your feet the right way, now you've got a pretty good foundation like to build upon. Then you can start when you're hitting your marks and you're like, I would do a drill where I would make a chalk mark where it was my middle point where I started from, feet square, and then like a little mark in front where my front foot went and another one behind where my back foot went, and just try to hit those marks every time and just do that. And then you get to where you can do that without like thinking about it or consciously. That's just where your feet go when you split your, you know? Mm-hmm. Then you can start learning how to like take a PVC and put it up above head. So you just like isolate these little elements and just like build upon them. But it's difficult because it's not fun and it's not cool. It's not like sexy, you know, just like to just like shoot a bow 100 times without looking at the target and not get to see your arrow hit a bullseye, you know. And like at the range, nobody else at the archer range I go to would do that.
Yeah.
So they're like, man, I look like a dummy. I'm shooting. They'd be like, why is he shooting the fucking 10-yard bale with a compound bow? But he took his sight off.
When you say that, and maybe because I haven't really done archery, I'm like, that actually, I mean, if I think of like in child mind almost, like what does a kid want to do if he gets a bow, or like a kid want to do if he like is given a hammer by his dad? Is like, he doesn't actually care to build something. It's just something about like, I remember being a kid and like having a little like toy-ish hammer, and like I just wanted to hammer like the bumper in my dad's car. Like I didn't care about nails or like what I was building. Like there's something about the action that's fun. And so when you say that, I'm like, well, if I didn't care about hitting stuff, in my like little boy brain, like just pulling the bow back and doing that probably would be fun. Like a kid would love to just shoot a hay bale at point blank range. And like, maybe it's getting into that kind of headspace.
Yeah, I think so. It's like a beginner's mind you got to keep, you know, to do stuff like that.
Yeah.
And I will get to where I enjoy it. Cause then when you start getting, it's like when you do stuff like that, you start developing this like subtle feel, and it feels really good. And to where you just like this motion just like is very, it just feels good, you know? Because when you first start doing it, you're like, okay, this is going to be boring where I just pop back my, but then as you start doing it, it's like these like levels of subtlety start kind of coming out in how you want to do it. So it's like the squeeze, how hard do I squeeze in my hand? How deep should I grab the thumb button with my thumb? Should I touch it right here? Should I touch it right here? Like, do I want to pull with my focus on pulling with my back, or should I focus on driving my elbow up and back? These like little subtle things change how you do it a lot.
Yeah.
It changes your feel of it a lot. And so now you're like, you feel the feel of it is getting like that much tighter and tighter and tighter. instead of focusing on being downfield and having like a group that hits like that or whatever, or having, you know, on seeing a result and then being like, I can claim that, to now you, that result is like something that you just like inherently feel like in your body.
Yeah, it's kind of like you're training your nervous system not only to get good at it, but to enjoy the action. Like, again, I'm thinking weightlifting, like if you're looking at the number, or like I have to get to a certain number of reps, it's tempting to cheat on your form just to squeeze out that extra rep, but then you're messing yourself up in the long run, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, I was thinking about I heard Pavel Tatsulin one time, he said, this idea of like the having to test, or like having to have the outcome, that like the top power lifters in the world peak like once or maybe twice a year. So like they're only really like testing themselves and seeing what kind of numbers they're putting up once or twice an entire year. And the rest of the time, they're just like, that's what they're doing, is they're just like training, going through these motions every day.
Yeah.
So it's like the strongest guys, that's what they do. Like if you want to be really good, that's what you do. You know, you just gotta go through these simple motions.
Yeah.
And I was to think about that, like what that means in the bigger context of your life. Like if you have a major goal, I think what happens is if your major goal is like analogous to hitting the bullseye down the field, you can get this panicky thing where you worry about if you can do it or not. You know, John Dudley talked about, like, you didn't want, it's like a fear of hitting the target. So it's like there's this fear of hitting the thing, because then all these like distractions that are like kind of surrounding you will fall away. And I think I was thinking about that, like, you need to give these things up to hit that thing. But I think you don't need to give those things up necessarily to hit the thing. It's more just like regaining like a focus, like to stay on that thing. Mm-hmm. And those things will just kind of like fall away, you know? Because yeah, like that, if you have like some kind of habit, like you want to lose weight, let's say, and you want to, and get stronger, you're like lifting weights and want to get in shape. And you are like, if your mind is occupied by like giving away food, because like that's something I've had a lot of trouble with. I'm a big eater. I've managed to not get real, real fat because I'm real active and stuff too. Mm-hmm. If I wasn't, I'd be like 400 pounds. Because
Yeah.
But like, if you're real concentrated on like, then you're just constant like negation, and it just feels fucking terrible. It's like, yeah. Constant just like beating yourself up.
Do you mind? But do you mind talking about that a little bit more? Like, sure. Cause like,
yeah, we'll, I know, talk about that.
Recently, you kind of slipped up and you gained a bunch of weight, and then you lost it again. Like, could you share, like, so if we bring this target panic analogy to like, say this, and then how you've, you know, like what is the shift? Cause I think that's like a really relatable thing with health, yeah, and all that stuff. Like, so it, just to bring this into your analogy, it's like your target was to be a certain way in your body, to lose a certain amount of weight. You've known how to do that. You know, you've been fit before, but then something about the fear of that is what makes you, let's say, target panic, which in effect is like eat too much when you know you don't mean to or something.
Yeah. It's almost like on a long-term goal, you can't have it like right now. Like I'm not going to be at whatever weight that it was that I'm shooting for. I think it was like 205. I wanted to get down to like 205. You're not going to be at that weight right now. And it's like being at that weight is that's an outcome. It's like hitting the bullseye, and being in that weight is not necessarily anything that you're gonna experience. Like it's representational, something you experience. Whereas like hitting a bullseye it's representational of excellence, precision, and calmness in your like shooting technique. When you're doing this, when you hit the bullseye, when you just do this consistently. So I think that the way I thought about losing weight is like, it's just like, it's kind of a straining sort of energy, and a kind of just like that straining kind of anxious energy about like, am I going to hit this target? Am I going to hit this target? And like hoping, it's like, there's like a hoping, or a, not even a hoping, like a wishing that you're going to hit that target without having like the physical, like palpable tools with which to hit that target.
Yeah.
And in the context of like, I guess losing weight, I've just like, I've taken the practice at first of just like forgetting about like this constant life, like forcing myself to not eat this, not eat that. And I found that I've lost some weight since doing that. Not crazy amounts, because I've done, you know, 1 month or a couple months periods, and where I've lost a lot of weight real quick, or I can fast. I've gone like 3 days, you know, without eating. Like when I first started talking to you, I did a 72-hour fast. But it doesn't seem to be sustainable. Not that there's anything wrong with doing this stuff. I think it's good. I definitely do more. But in my like day-to-day life, I just was like, and it's just like a drag, you know, it's a constant like drag on myself to always be worrying about. So what is my goal? My goal, I could have a number in mind that I would like to hit, and maybe, but what is my, I like, why do I want to be in shape? Well, because it would feel better. Mm-hmm. You know, I might have a lot of thoughts, but like, well, I might get laid more if I'm in better shape. I might, you know, I might look better. The reality of that is though, that like the women I've dated, they couldn't have given a fuck less if I was any thinner, like, mm-hmm. And a lot of them really like me having kind of like a dad bod. And I'm like muscular. I got, by word, lift weights. I got like mm-hmm. big muscles and strong stuff. So that, the reality, probably that's not really stopping me from getting laid. But I want to be, because when I've been thinner, I just felt better. Like at my life, I felt better about life, you know, like it's a drag to be kind of like overweight.
Yeah.
So like I think the thing to think about is the feeling, not the result. Because like we get so attached to what it is, what does my thing look like, what does my life look like, what do my results look like. But like what you need to know is like, what does it feel to be, what does it feel like to be thin? Like what does it feel like to be a guy who knows when he draws back, like he's hitting where he wants to. So
yeah, it's kind of like fine tuning, training the feeling. Like you're training, like you're fine tuning that with every rep you pull the bowstring back. Like you said, like you're kind of calibrating what's the perfect feeling so that even before you release, you know, it just feels great. So like with this example, it's like, instead of straining to not eat junk food, for instance, can you practice enjoying eating healthy? It's like almost like you're practicing a different emotional reaction.
Yeah, because like eating that junky food the feel of that is not good. It doesn't feel good. Like nobody ever eats that stuff. Like you eat that shit like raw. Stuff. I remember at the Zen Center one time, there was a guy who was, we had this like group, and he'd give every week, like somebody from the group would give a different talk about whatever they felt like. And then we would kind of like expound on that, have a short meditation. And he was a chef, and he was talking about mindful eating. And he was like, I remember he said one time I got a Big Mac from McDonald's, and I just like ate it very mindfully, and it was disgusting. It was just like gross. Uh-huh. So like nobody, it's not the kind of thing that you, if you were like in this kind of like feel state, you just wouldn't want that. So I think the biggest thing is like to cultivate this kind of like feel state.
Yeah, or you recognize, like, so I have a friend who she's super skinny. She used to own a bakery, so she'd be around cakes all day, and she's like super thin, and people always be like, how the hell are you like so skinny when you are literally making cakes and like tasting them all day? And she's just like, I love cake, but I get full really fast. Like as soon as she's full, she just stops. And like, I was thinking about that with like other addictive behaviors, like porn or like certain substances. It's like, there's something about it. Like you're saying, like no one does it mindfully. No one's like, I'm going to be a connoisseur of this Big Mac or this pornography video and appreciate the art of it, you know? But maybe, you know, if you did do that, maybe you could enjoy heroin in a responsible way, like really being, I don't know if that's true, but with certain things.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know. I heard, do you know who Carl Hart is?
Yeah, I was thinking of him. Like, I imagine he probably doesn't binge. Joe Rogan. Yeah.
Yeah. Which who knows? I don't know. Maybe he could.
Yeah. To just like, you know, just be a connoisseur of every, like be a snob of like every vice, like a snob of, actually you probably wouldn't drink cheap beer if you're really a beer snob.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I guess like in fancy restaurants, the portions are always really small. People are just trying to taste them.
Yeah, that's true. I remember I went someplace here in Anchorage, I live in Alaska, and my dad and stepmom were up here, and we went to this pretty nice restaurant to eat, and they got salmon or halibut, or I think they each got like salmon or halibut, And they brought him this like tiny piece of fish, and I was like, damn, that's all you get? Shit, because I just got a steak.
Yeah.
I just got a ribeye. And I was like, that's, but, you know, that's a rare thing. I spent a summer, the first summer I moved up here, I spent commercial fishing, catching king salmon. So, like, we ate king salmon. I'd eat like a fucking, you know, 2 pound like king salmon fillet all the time for dinner. I was just like, I thought that this seemed normal. So, yeah, for them, it was like a huge treat to get this super fresh, I'm sure, king salmon that was like delicious and expertly cooked. I buy like excellent chefs and stuff too.
Yeah. Although I do wonder sometimes, like with certain snobby things, I've been debating this with my buddy who's like kind of turned me into a coffee snob. I used to just be able to drink any coffee, but like he's been introducing me to good coffees, so like, which basically means I don't appreciate most coffee now. I was thinking like how much of that is real, you know, like the whole thing of even wine experts can't really tell when wine is good. It's just if it's expensive, they think it's good. I don't know. That's a whole thing.
Yeah, there might, but there's like, that's, I'm sure that there's like, there's the levels right to it, but like at what point is it kind of bullshit? You know,
yeah.
Cause like, I like good coffee. I don't drink, like I get an espresso, you know, I like to drink good espresso. And like, I can tell that the espresso from like the local Kaladi Brothers in Anchorage is better than the one from Starbucks. I mean, it tastes a lot better to me. And it sure as fuck is better than like some drip ass fucking Folgers shit. Like I wouldn't even just like, I would just like not drink coffee if that's all there was. If somebody was just like handed me a big cup of drip coffee from a bun machine, I'd be like, that's, I don't want that, you know, that's not what I want. It's just like, it wouldn't be good, you know?
Yeah. Oh, actually one thing I wanted to bring up from before, cause this book I've been reading, it's called the Hour Between Wolf and Dog. It was saying how, well, at least one theory is, like I said, your muscles react to stimuli before your mind, but also before your emotions. And there's a theory that your emotions actually respond to what your muscles are doing, and then your brain processes it. So it's like you see a predator, your muscles tense to run away. A few milliseconds later, your hormones release certain things that give you an emotion in response to what your muscles did. Like if you could somehow train your muscles to not contract, you actually wouldn't feel fear. It's kind of like your physical posture tells your feelings what to feel. Kind of like the power poses thing. Like you put your hand, whatever. I mean, it sounds silly, but like you put your hands on your hips to feel confident. And I just want to, you know, I kind of want to just boil home like whatever the lessons are of this target panic metaphor that I really like that you brought up. Something about training your emotions, I just find really interesting.
I guess in that like space of that very subtle and simple practice, there's like an emotionality that you can, because when you're just focused on this like very simple thing to do, it's, I don't know, maybe you can, your emotions like don't get the better of you, you know, in these moments.
Yeah.
And then you can just like stay confident, let them come and go as they need to, and then recognize like what it is that you need to recognize when you need to follow them or not. Like,
yeah. Well, cause it's also like, even with this, the snobby being snobby on coffee or whatever, wine, we're saying like some, it's not that like maybe it's total bullshit, but like there's something that can be trained, right? Like you can kind of, you could, I mean, a good marketer could probably convince someone, like the whole butter coffee thing. I don't know if you're into that, but like, you know, a marketer kind of came up with that. Maybe it's got the health benefits, but you have all these people like loving the idea and loving the taste all of a sudden, kind of because they were convinced of it. It's like someone got in their head to make them love the taste of like oil at the top of their coffee. And it's like, okay, whether it's bullshit or not, can you actively train yourself to love going to the gym or love writing in the morning when you have resistance? Like, can you, or like just love pulling the string back so you don't care about what happens and like it becomes more of an intrinsic thing? Like, it's almost like, I was thinking about a weird thought, but like training yourself to love certain things that you know are good for you.
I guess that's where the feel comes in. It's like you learn to love it because you learn how you, when you start focusing more about how you feel instead of like how you think about things, like you realize that like you learn to love those things when you just like calm down and let yourself feel how good they are. Just simple things like pulling a bow back or hitting a nice snatch or like doing a kettlebell, doing a Turkish get up.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's how you learn to love those things. And then also, in the context of a, like a bigger goal, you can recognize how they're serving that bigger goal, like how these small things that you're doing are driving you forward.
Yeah.
Towards that goal.
Yeah, for some reason, I just it just popped in my head, like Mike Tyson. I forget who he was speaking to, but like, I'm going to F you until you love me. It's like, I don't know why that came to mind. Maybe I shouldn't have said that, but like, something about like, yeah, if you do something with the right attitude, you can love it somehow, even if it sucks. Yeah, anyway.
I was kind of into butter coffee also for a minute, because I had a girlfriend that was really into, she drank a butter coffee every morning. So I tried to be ketogenic, but she wasn't. She like ate whatever the fuck she wanted the rest of the day.
Yeah.
And it is. I also thought, like, but don't we already put, like, you just put a cream in your coffee, that's pretty much all fat anyways. And then
yeah,
if you're just not having any calories, you're going to be ketogenic anyways.
So. Yeah. I really liked, you know, so I'll just say, like, so Dave Asprey's the guy who made it popular. I saw him speak, and this is not a knock on him by any means, but like I saw him speak at a convention and he kept talking about, and he was like pitching and like revealing his whole special coffee line. And like, he kept bringing up all these stats and like all these ideas that were I knew they were unprovable, but the benefits he shared seemed so amazing. They were like everything that I wanted to experience. So even though like my brain was like, come on, like not all this could be true. Some part of me was like, if only half of what he's claiming is true, this is amazing. And then I ended up spending like $200 while being skeptical on all of his products. I bought his protein, his collagen, his coffee, because I was like, this is probably bullshit. But if it's even half true or 10% true, it's worth it. And he got me to buy all this shit. And then for a long time, I was doing the butter coffee thing, thinking like, trying to convince myself to love it. Like other people would criticize me for it. Like, oh, that's so gross. So like, no, here's all the benefits, keto, blah, 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 butter's a food. But now I look back, it's like, yeah, it's just kind of gross to drink coffee and have like grease all over your face from the butter because it all floats to the top. Anyway.
I personally, I really like the taste of butter coffee. I think it's pretty delicious.
Did you really? Or like, were you just convinced? Were you just convinced?
No, I did. Benefits? I really did. No, I didn't think too much about the benefits. I liked it. I thought it tasted really good. If you use some good butter, I liked it a lot.
I don't know.
I stopped doing it because I just don't ever make coffee at home anymore. I just usually just go get espresso or whatever in the morning. Because I like, espresso's the best.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy with cream. I'm happy with getting my fat elsewhere.
Yeah.
Cool, man. So anything else going on in your world you want to share?
I also was thinking about, have you read the book Siddhartha?
Oh, yeah.
Herman Hesse?
Twice.
You know, there's a, oh man, I've read that. That's like, I think that's my favorite novel. I mean, I think for men, like this is like the hero's journey distilled into very basic elements. And that. But there's a part in the book where when he first goes to work for Kamaswami, he's like, well, why should I hire you? You're just like this sadhu from the woods. Like, you can't do anything. He's like, you know how to read a little bit, but which is valuable at that time. But it's like, what can you do? Like, you can't do anything. And he's like, I can think, I can fast, I can wait. Those three things are of the utmost importance, I think. Because like, when you can do those things, like you can do anything. Because like, when you can think, and like, by think, I mean like, not think where you're just like contemplating, but like to think critically about things and like honestly and not in a reactive way, because like so many of our thoughts are just like things that just like bounce around back and forth. And fast is like to do without external stimuli, whether it be food or whatever. Name your like vices you want to take in, media, music, whatever. And then if you can wait to not have to like pounce on whatever is like right in front of you. It's just like, can you do without things and like be all right where you're at right now? And I think that's an important, that comes into this like target panic idea where you can do those three things and you can be unreactive and like let yourself stay in the situation of doing something really, really simple and really straightforward and not have to worry about what else is going on around you. Like you can just sit and do this over and over and over again and not have to worry about, am I gonna hit the target? Like, is this getting better? Is this what I should be doing to hit the target? Like, am I wasting my time? And I think it's just important to be able to do simple things like that.
Yeah.
It's like everything, whatever it is you do is just like, is these like, it's like your thoughts, you can make big decisions with your thoughts about large changes in your life, but in your like day-to-day feel of how you want to execute and achieve those things, you just have to do lots of small things. So if you want to, like, I'm looking to become a pilot. If I want to become a pilot, like, it can be easy to get panicky and think, like, because it's being like a pilot where I'm working and earning a living is a ways away. Like, it's far away from me right now. It can be boring to do the things I need to do to get to that point where I can say, I'm a pilot and I can just, like, get in a plane and go fly around or get hired to fly around and, like, have a good time doing it. But, like, to go take the time, go to the doctor, get my medical certificate. It's like boring. And it's like, you don't want to do it because you're like, well, I can do it later. You know, like, it's not,
right.
I don't have to do it right now because I'm not going to start flying. So I don't have to do it right now. But it's like, I'm off work earlier this afternoon. Okay. This is the time to just like go do something mundane and boring like that and get my medical certificate. And I found that like doing things like that feels incredibly rewarding. For a lot of years, I kind of lived this, I wouldn't say like hell law because I wasn't criminal, but I just like didn't keep up on official things that I had to do. Like I went 5 years with an expired driver's license because I like lived out in the country and like it was kind of an issue sometimes. Like I would have needed, you know, but I got by without it and I was like, I don't want to fuck with it. You know, I don't want to deal with it. And then I had to like deal with it again. I had to like retake my driver's test when I was like 25.
Yeah,
because it's been expired so long when I got it back. But like keeping up with things like that feels really good. And now it's like I got that little thing. Now I can take the next step. Or now I'm like it's just like having that feel of doing this. It's like I have that. It's something I feel that I have that I know that is like palpable, that is like in my favor, and that is like it gives me freedom to do something more.
Yeah. And like on the material level, it's like kind of like compounding interest. Like this one day doesn't seem like a big deal, but you keep doing it. It's like, it's a huge difference. I think with that thing, and I'm glad you brought that up. Like, it's like, that's the first thing I thought of when you brought up Siddhartha. And it's just like, the weight part has been the hardest part for me. Like I really, you know, I probably would have been a lot closer to certain goals if I was able to think like in really long-term time frames, which I just wasn't able to, I just didn't do when I was younger for whatever reason. Like this idea of like, I don't need X by X date. I just need to do today's work. I mean, it sounds so cliche, but like, you know, that's kind of just like getting the reps in and enjoying the process and trusting that it's hitting the mark. It's been personally hard for me actually, but I'm going to remember to do this a little better with my, I'm gonna remember to do this better with my writing, for instance.
Yeah, I've had trouble. I think the biggest ones that are trouble for me out of those would be fasting for sure. It's like I'm just externally focused about a lot of stuff. For one, my Zen practice has like been a huge, has really taught me how to think fast and wait for sure. That's essentially what the practice is. Yeah, when I was younger, I didn't do it either. And I remember now I live in Alaska now, and I moved here about 3 years ago. I'm 37. When I was 18, I left home. I graduated high school when I was 17. Actually, I turned 18 shortly after. I left home like right away, like the day after I graduated. And I went out west and I worked. And I went to this guide school. I wanted to be a hunting guide. I wasn't sure where I'd go. I was like, I kind of like as few like grow up and you're into hunting, then like. Just like this mystical thing, you know. And this guy that ran this guide school would like, if you wanted to go work afterwards, he would hook you up with a job with some of his like outfitter buddies. It's like guides are in short supply. It's not an easy job to do. It doesn't pay shit, and like they always need people to do it. And most of the people that went to that thing were like my age now. Like they were just kind of like it was a like a hobby thing or an adventure thing. So I was the only ones, and a job came up in Alaska. Like he's like, there's a thing in Alaska, you can go to Alaska if you want. In Alaska, it's tougher to become a guide here than it is in Western states. In the Western states, you just like, you get hired by an outfitter, you get a guide's license right away, and you're a guide. In Alaska, you had to work for 3 years as like a I was like a helper, basically, just like packing fucking meat and shit on your back, you know, and just like willing ass work. Or it'd be like a fishing guide or like whatever. It's a little bit of a time where you can be like a hunting guide. And at the time I was like, man, I don't want to wait 3 fucking years before I can guide hunters. You know, like at 18, it just like seemed like forever. I was like, there's no fucking way I want to do that. And then I didn't go. I didn't come to Alaska. And I stayed and worked in the West. But if I had, it's like, it's that building. It's like a simple thing, doing these simple things. And that would have set a real strong foundation that I could have just kept building and building and building.
Yeah.
And you can, you know, you can do that by just like doing it without. It's like, I need that. I want that feeling like I've arrived and I'm doing it. You know, but you can't get that till you like just do the simple things. You can't hit that target consistently with precision over and over again, because you just know you can without doing the same, doing the simple thing. And if you're trying to, you're just kind of like hoping and wishing, and you're throwing Hail Marys, you know, here and there, and just like fixated on that end result. And I think that kind of sums up what I was thinking of.
Yeah.
This target panic analogy.
Yeah. Cool, man. It's been fun speaking. I really like this analogy, and like this is one of these conversations that's gonna have me really rethink my
goal cool,
setting. Yeah. Just like, you know, because like, you know, when you first brought up this idea, it's like it's been like a week and a half or something, or whatever, 2 weeks. Like I've been, you know, little things have been popping up. It's like, man, I've been working on this history show for like 5 months. It's still not done. I've been working on my book for forever. And it makes me want to be like, fuck it. Like, and just not touch it, which I guess is like the equivalent of binge eating, for instance, right? It's just like, fuck it. It's too far away. But it's like, oh yeah, I mean, this is just the process. I mean, it's like retraining your feelings, getting like in love with the process, really enjoying it. And by that you hit the target, you know? So,
yeah. I think to go back to this just one more time, to this like feeling of the fear, it's like, if you're thinking about what it is that you want to be, like, what is it about that you admire so much? Like, if you want to be, like, if I want to be a pilot, like, why do I think being a pilot is cool? Because for one, it's a courageous thing to do, to be like a bush pilot in Alaska. And like, to do it, you have to be extremely organized. You can't be, contrary to what people might think, you can't be like a fucking, it's not about being like a wild bastard and just like taking chances. It's actually the opposite. You can be extremely calculated and organized and very, very good at like managing risk and knowing what to do and what to do and how to be like really, really decisive. So it's like, what is that pilot's mindset like? What is that guy like? Is he like somebody who just like is like nervous and
yeah, does he put off his medical does he put off his medical appointment?
Put off his medical, you know, does he like not take care of these simple things that he does? Does he like not check to make sure that the fuel cap is on tight, you know? Does he not make sure that the people that he's coming with are bringing the correct weight in their baggage as they're supposed to? Like, is he putting off these little simple things? Like, he's probably not. If he's going to be any good at it, he's not going to be doing that stuff. And you're not going to get to that level if you're not doing that stuff. So the reason you think that is cool, because it feels good to be like that. Like, it feels good to be that way. That's not like some kind of hard thing that you got to give up and sacrificing and discipline yourself for. I mean, you have to do all those things, but it's not like a negation. It's not like living in this like negative space where you're just like kind of beating yourself up, stripping away aggressively, like taking away bad habits. It's just it's a choosing of simple and like excellent feeling and habits. And it's integrity, you know, like that's basically what it is. So
yeah.
Whatever it is you think that you really want to do, if you think about how people who do that are, what does it feel like to be them? And then you want to build that feel. I think that's the thing.
For sure. Yeah. Yeah. Cause those qualities are accessible now, even if the material result isn't. Yeah. Cool, man. I think that's a great place to end. Yeah, thanks. This is a great conversation. And we got to go hunting at some point. At some point, I'll make it somewhere with a real bow.
Yeah, you got to get a real bow. And...
yeah.
Did you say that you built the archery range at your house?
No, I was starting to build one. I mean, build one out of like old carpets and stuff. But I'm kind of afraid of shooting over my fence and hitting my neighbor because I don't have that much space. So so not really. I might put up something at some point somewhere. But right now I'm just trying to kill pigeons.
We can talk about arching. I'll help you get into what it is that you need to get. You got to get.
Yeah, I'll hit you up about equipment and stuff.
Hold on. Okay. Well, yeah, thanks for having me on here. This is fun.
For sure.